Mechazdeinu. What is our kindness and matzit kenu? What is our righteousness? What possible significance could our righteousness have to Hashem? As it says, Hashem says, whether you sin, you do righteousness, you sin, what difference does it make to me? Yes, it says Hashem wanted to be king. He created the world because he wanted to be king. And therefore, he created the world. And it's up to us to coronate Hashem as king. So therefore, you would think that it does matter. And we do have significance. We are the ones who make Hashem king. It's up to us. But if you think about it, it doesn't make sense. For two reasons. Firstly, you can't be king over yourself. Right? If you're Robinson Crusoe, alone on an island, you can't coronate yourself, put a crown on your head, and say, long live I, long live the king. You'll do a selfie, record yourself. It doesn't make sense. Even your children can't coronate you as king, or even the close ministers. By definition, a king is someone who has subjects, who are separate and apart from the king. And when the subject willingly acknowledges the king and coronates the king and bows down to the king, and the king's wish becomes his command, and the king wants him to do something, and the subject willingly chooses to do it and to lift up his hand and to do it. If I can make you do what I want, that makes me a king. But could you be king over yourself? Well, my hand is listening to me, so maybe I'm king. My legs are listening to me. I want them to walk, and my legs walk, and my hands move. So I'm a king. No, your hands are you. Your legs are you. So you can't be king over yourself. Therefore, the reality is that everything that exists is completely nullified before Hashem. Yes, we feel egotistical. We feel as if we're separate. Consciously, we feel self-conscious. We don't feel Hashem. We're not conscious of Hashem. We're conscious of ourselves. We feel separate, apart, independent, self-sufficient, self-made. But the truth is, nothing could be further than the truth. The reality is, just because we don't feel it, it doesn't change the truth. The reality is that we're completely insignificant. We're completely nullified before Hashem. We're completely inseparable from Hashem. Because our whole being and our whole existence is nothing other than the divine, God's energy, the divine energy that's creating us. So that is who we are. We're nothing else. Even when Hashem creates us, we don't truly exist. Our whole existence is nothing other than the divine energy that's creating us. Just like when you throw a ball up the air. So it's going against the nature. By nature, the ball should be going downward, the pull of gravity. You're going against the force of gravity, and you're throwing the ball. So therefore, you need a strength, you need a power and a force to take the ball and to throw it up. But what's pushing the ball? It's that thrust, it's that force, that energy that's behind the ball that's pushing the ball. And that energy is limited, so the moment the energy stops, the ball reverts back and falls right back down. So even when the ball is flying, it doesn't mean that the ball now is a flying ball. The ball changed its nature. The ball essentially cannot fly. It's your force that's pushing the ball. So too, it's with existence. Essentially, inherently, we don't exist, period. Hashem created us from nothing. So we inherently are in a state of non-being and non-existence. It's Hashem's energy and force that's constantly and continuously, unnaturally, creating us and sustaining us. So even now, it doesn't mean that now suddenly we exist. We truly exist. We're nothing other than the divine energy. That's our substance. That's who we are. There's nothing else. Especially when you think about the reality that even the divine energy that's creating us, the source of our life, is completely nullified within Hashem. It's like a drop in the ocean that's part of the ocean, and suddenly you're looking at it as an isolated drop, which is completely insignificant and completely, it's not the reality of that drop. It's part of a whole ocean. So it's completely nullified within Hashem. It's completely unified within Hashem. So the reality is that we are not separate from Hashem. We are completely unified with Hashem. There's nothing other than Hashem. So it makes no sense. Who is Hashem king over? Hashem created the world because he wanted to be king. And he wants us to obey him and to listen to him and to be righteous and to be good and to be kind. It's like being, who is he king over? We are part of Hashem. We're nothing other than Hashem. Could you be king over yourself? That's question number one. Question number two, even from our perspective, from our conscious perspective, where we do feel insignificant, we do feel self-conscious, and we do feel egotistical, separate and apart from Hashem. But we are completely insignificant. Could you be king over an anthill? The ants are going to coronate you as king. Would you feel like king? But there's no connection. Ants crowning me won't make me feel like a king. Well, the difference between us and the ants, the difference in us and Hashem is infinitely greater. So what significance could our actions have? Matzitkenu, Matzchazdenu, all our righteousness, our best behavior, our righteousness, our everything good that we do is completely meaningless and insignificant to Hashem. So how could that possibly evoke within Hashem a feeling of being king? And that should be the motivation why He created the world. Hashem created the world, it says. Who did He consult with? He consulted with the righteous ones. Of course, that's before He created anything. But Hashem saw the future, and Hashem envisioned that there's going to be righteous people, and they're going to live a righteous life, and their kindness and their righteousness, this is what motivated them to create the world. How could that motivate them to create the world? It's completely meaningless and insignificant. It's only because of Hashem's kindness, Hashem's desire, Hashem's desire. Not that it has any inherent significance or meaning. It's only because this is what Hashem wanted. Hashem desired that our actions, as insignificant as they truly are, Hashem will consider it as if we are separate, even though we're not. The truth is we're not. The truth is we're completely unified within Hashem. We just feel separate. But Hashem, in His infinite will and desire, decided that He is going to consider our conscious feeling of separation as if we are separate. And He's going to desire our righteousness, our doing the right thing, overcoming difficulties, withstanding tests, and doing the right thing. And that's the continuation of the Akedah. We say this right after the prayer, after the Akedah. Because Yirei Shemayim, this was Avram. That's when Hashem declared that Avram was a Yirei Shemayim, a God-fearing person. He withstood the test, the ultimate test. So Hashem decided that all of this should be meaningful to Him. And He gets pleasure out of it. And He feels like king. Because we subject ourselves to Him. And we obey His mitzvahs. And we listen to Him. And we're righteous. And we do what's right. For between man and man, and between man and God, Chazdenu and Tzidkenu. It's only because Hashem desired this. We don't know why Hashem desired it, because it makes no sense. But this is what Hashem desired. This was His taiva, this was His pleasure, this is what Hashem wanted. And it's only because Hashem desired it that anything that we do has any meaning or any significance. Not because inherently it has any meaning or significance. That's what we're saying now. Machazdenu, matzitkenu, all our righteousness and all our morality and ethics and wholesomeness and all our righteousness, the reality is, the truth is, it's nothing. Machazdenu, matzitkenu, what a powerful statement, what a powerful recognition and truth. All our righteousness is nothing. And that's why it says, the Navi says, Im chatasu matiful boy, if you sinned to Hashem, what have you done to Hashem? Im tzedakta matitin lo, if you were righteous, what did you give to Hashem? The truth is, it really means nothing to Hashem. Makacheinu, what is our strength? Magvuruseinu, what is our might? What can we say before you, Hashem? Haloi kol agiboyrim ka'ayin lefanech. All the strong ones, all the mighty men are nothing before you. People pride themselves in their might. Their strength, mighty, powerful, successful. Hashem, ka'ayin, like nothing. V'anshi Hashem, and the people of renown, Nobel Prize winners, Forbes 400, presidents, prime ministers, Hollywood stars. It's meaningless. K'lo hoyu, as if they never existed, as if they've never been. Even when they exist, they don't exist. It means nothing. V'chachamim. All the wise ones, the geniuses, intelligentsia, kivli mada, as if without knowledge. Unavoinim, and the men of understanding, kivli haskil, as if devoid of intelligence. Not only because he can't compare human intelligence with divine intelligence, because divine intelligence is infinite, and our intelligence and understanding is limited and finite. No, because Hashem is undefined. Hashem is beyond intelligence. So the most brilliant intelligence to Hashem is nothing. Even the divine supernal wisdom to Hashem is really nothing. Hashem, wisdom doesn't mean anything to Hashem. Brilliance, it doesn't begin to touch the essence of Hashem. So all the brilliance in the world, all the wisdom in the world, and all, we're talking about genuine wisdom. We're not talking about foolishness. We're talking about wisdom. Everything he's saying here, we're talking about wonderful qualities. These are wonderful qualities: kindness, righteousness, strength, might, renown, wisdom, understanding. But the truth is, before Hashem, it's all nothing. It's meaningless, inherently meaningless. So we're confessing, not only for ourselves, but for all the nations of the world, we're saying everything that everyone is so proud of. They're proud of their might and their strength and their brilliance and their wisdom and their breakthroughs and their culture. And it's all meaningless. It doesn't mean anything. Completely insignificant. All the stars and the Nobel Prize winners and literary giants and brilliant philosophers and talent and abilities and success and power and might, to Hashem it's nothing. So therefore, who cares about it? Who cares? What have you accomplished? And thousands of years later, you look back, what happened to all these mighty civilizations? Buried, forgotten, gone. Footnotes in history of interest only to historians. Or if you can't sleep at night, History Channel. Irrelevant. Completely irrelevant. Completely irrelevant. Kiroiv ma'aseim toyu. Because most of their deeds are nothing. A toyu, a nought. Vimei chayeim, and the days of their lives, hevel lefanecha, vanity before you. U'moyser ha'odam and abeim ha'oyin. The preeminence of man over animal is oyin, nothing. You know, now we know that the DNA of a human being and an animal is almost the same. In us and a monkey is very little. Very, very small difference. And the truth is what he's saying here, umoyser adam and abeima, the only thing that makes a human being superior to the animal is oyin. If you become egoless, when you're egoless. If a person is egotistical, then why are we better than the animal? The animal says, why are you better than me? Why are you lording over me? You are the animal. You are the worst animal. What gives you a right? A person who has no egolessness, no selflessness, has no self-control, no restraint, just lives a life of indulgence, pride, ego, all about money, power, fame, then there is no difference. There's no superiority to the person over the animal. The superiority of a person over the animal is only when a person works on his inner animal and turns it into oyin, takes the ani, the I, the ego, and turns the letters around and turns it into oyin, to become aware and conscious of the reality that I am nothing. I don't exist. And my whole existence is Hashem. There's nothing besides Hashem. Because hakel havel, it's all foolishness. As King Solomon, the wisest of all men, concluded the end of his life, hakel havel, it's all foolishness. He had wisdom, 1,000 wives, brilliance, power, everything you could ask for in life. And he says it's all havel, it's all foolishness, it's all narishkeit. Levad, except the only thing that's real is haneshama hatahira, the pure neshama that we have. She asida liten din v'cheshben lifnei chisei chveidecha. The neshama in the future will give an accounting before the throne of glory. Because only the neshama knows what's going on in the inside. The neshama knows what we're thinking, what our intent is. People can see our actions. They can see our behavior. They can testify to our behavior. But who could testify what's going on in the inside? What we're thinking, what we're feeling, what our intent was. Did we have the proper intent or not the proper intent? Did we have selfish motives, or did we have any ulterior motives, or did we have pure motives? The neshama can tell. The neshama knows. So the neshama will testify to Hashem after 120 years, lifnei chisech veidecha, before the throne of glory, before the throne of Hashem. And why does he say din v'cheshbon? We also find this in Ethics of Our Fathers. First din, and then cheshbon. First the verdict, and then the accounting. First you have to give an accounting. And then you come to a conclusion, you come to a verdict. So the Baal Shem Tov said, because even when a Jew sins, a Jew is a piece of the divine essence. Just like no one has any say over Hashem, so too no one can have any say over a neshama. So no one could render a verdict. No one has the power to render a verdict against the neshama, against the Jewish soul. Even the heavenly court doesn't have that power. The only one who can render a verdict if a Jew sinned against his neshama is the Jew himself. How do you get the Jew to render a verdict about himself? So they show, when he comes to the heaven, they show him a movie about, he says, what do you think? We want to ask your opinion. And they show him about someone else. If someone did this and this, what do you think should be his sentence? And of course, as usual, when it comes to someone else, we're very harsh, we're very strict, we're very tough, unyielding, uncompromising, especially we're conservative. It has to be 100%, no rachmanis, tough love, and we lay it on thick. And then the Bezdin turns around and says, okay, mister, you just rendered a verdict on yourself. That person that you watched in the movie, that was you. We didn't say it, you said it. So first the person gives a din, and then comes the cheshbon. First he renders the verdict, then comes the calculation. Okay, let's calculate your life. Well, you just gave the verdict. That's you. We don't see it in ourselves. We only see it in the other person. That's why we have to be so careful of being harsh about another person. When we say something harsh about another person, because we are judged every day, truth is. Every day we're judged. Every moment of the day. So when we are harsh to another person, and usually we are harsh, unforgiving, unyielding, uncompromising, then the heavenly court says, okay, you're no better than that person. Whatever you said about the other person, that's you. And you said it. We didn't say it. You said it. So whatever you said the other person deserves, it's exactly what we're going to do to you. See, that's what he says, din and then cheshbon. And then we say, v'chol ha-goyim, and all the nations ka'ayin negdecha, are nothing in comparison to you. Shenemer, it says, hein goyim, the nations kemar midli, are like a drop from a bucket. There's different words in Hebrew for a drop. You can say tipa. Here we say mar. Mar means, also comes from the word bitterness. Because mar represents a drop that fell away from the bucket. That's disconnected from the bucket. You don't associate the drop to the bucket, where it came from. Versus tipa comes from the word menatef, it's dripping. So while it's dripping, I can see where the drop is coming from. So there's two types of lives. You can be a tipa. Tipa means, yes, you feel separate, you're self-aware, you're self-conscious. But you feel that you're dripping from the bucket. You're connected to Hashem, you're coming from Hashem. You're getting your life from Hashem. So you're not totally disconnected. Versus the nations of the world are kemar midli, bitterness. It's like a drop that's completely disassociated, disconnected from their source, from their bucket. You don't have that awareness and that consciousness of Hashem, of their source, where they're coming from. Uchashachak miznayim, no more than a dust upon scales, which you don't even tell. You can't even tell that there's dust. You don't even see it. But it's completely insignificant. Nechshavu. We consider it like a dust in the scales. Hey Niyim, behold, the isles are like the flying dust. The islands, the nations, the continents, the islands are like a flying dust. Completely insignificant. So this is a very humbling confession. Humbling recognition. Which keeps us very grounded. Very real. Checks our arrogance. Instead of us becoming haughty. Especially as civilization progresses, we become so taken with our brilliance. Follow the science! With our brilliance, and our capabilities. And we're the first ones to tell you how brilliant we are. When in reality, the crushing reality is that we're completely inconsequential, completely insignificant. You know, most people can't live with the, as Hanji says, with the inconsequence of their inconsequentiality of their being, of their existence. But if you look at the bigger picture, and in comparison to Hashem, the only, the ultimate, the absolute and only truth and reality, what are we? It's all nonsense. It's completely insignificant, completely meaningless. And it says before you daven, a person has to meditate and reflect on the greatness of Hashem and our insignificance. Maimonides says when a person starts meditating and reflecting on the infinite wisdom, the divine wisdom that we find and see in creation, we become completely humbled, like a squash bug. You're completely humble. Your ego becomes completely humbled. So before you start davening, you have to check our ego. You have to put our ego in place. You have to approach Hashem with total humility. You can't fill a full cup. And a person is so full of themselves, literally and figuratively, and we're so taken by ourselves, then there's no openness. There's no opening. There's surely no hunger. You have to be hungry for godliness. You have to be open for godliness. When we're so taken with ourselves, and so self-occupied and self-absorbed, we can't even see past the tip of our own nose. There's no openness. There's no relish, there's no hunger, there's no appetite, there's no joy, there's no pleasure, there's no understanding of feeling. You know, we're almost at Pesach. So we're going to eat the matzah, which is like a paradox. On one hand, the matzah is, the Torah calls it lechem oini. You have to eat impoverished bread, simple, flour, water, and that's it. Nothing else. Impoverished bread that the poor person would eat. On the other hand, the matzah reminds us of the freedom that we left Egypt in such a rush, in such a haste, that the dough didn't have a chance to rise to leaven. And that's why the matzah has to be eaten while you're leaning, reclining. You have to eat it royally. So you're eating bread of impoverishment, and yet you have to eat it in a state of royalty. But like everything else in life, it's real. It's paradoxical. Because in order to truly pray, in order to truly connect with Hashem, in order to truly be elevated, in order to truly become alive, first you have to be completely humbled. You have to realize how impoverished existence per se is. Without Hashem, as we repeat here 7 times, Hevel, it's Hevel, Ma, what are we? What significance is it? It's nothing. Why are we so taken with ourselves? Why are we so self-absorbed? We have to be humbled. And only then do we become open and receptive to relish, to cherish. Then we can experience freedom. Once you get beyond your ego and you connect with Hashem, that's when reality opens up for you. Otherwise, all it takes to block out reality is put a finger in front of your eyes and you block out all of reality. This is a blockage. When a person is so taken with his brilliance and his righteousness and his kindness and his strength and his might and his successes and his... You're clogged. You're blocked. You don't see past the tip of your own nose. You don't see anything. You're blind, deaf, and dumb to the richness, the reality of what life truly has to offer, which is our connection with Hashem. That is the beginning, the middle, the end, the foundation. This is our source of inspiration. This is what gives us joy. This is what makes life worth living. This is what makes everything meaningful and real, as we're about to read. But that will continue next time we get back. We'll read the next 2 paragraphs. And this is an introduction to the Shema. And then we have the conclusion after the Shema that we're going to say.